cliffcentral.com. Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome back to Future CEOs. A fantastic conversation with John DeMartini, Dr. John DeMartini, as per usual.
I know I'm a bit rusty because I haven't been in studio, but now I'm warm for our next guest, warming it up. And do you know what? I love the fact that he's got such a journey of life and a story to tell, and what he's doing with his life currently really hits home for me specifically as an HIV/AIDS ambassador and activist.
So before we get into that, remember, if you've just joined us, if you can answer yes, I'm a future CEO, then this is a show for you. We're here to try and help you expedite either the growth of your business or your career journey. And how do we do it? We bring the best and the brightest into studio. CEOs that have done it and are doing it. Are you a CEO that has done it and is doing it, Ross?
Well, certainly surviving the journey and enjoying it so far.
That's a good start. Ross Bierman, the CEO of All Life.
Yeah.
Welcome into studio. We're grateful to have you here. Well, you know what we do? We don't generally introduce people. I know sometimes in the last conversation with Dr. DeMartini, Luby couldn't help herself. But we asked them to introduce themselves. So would you please do that and just give us a sense of who you are? Where did you grow up? Well, how did you get to a point where you're sitting here as a CEO?
Well, I'm a Cape Townian, firstly, so I always tell people they should be thrilled that I talk to them because we're very cliquey down in Cape Town.
Oh, yes, that's true.
So I grew up in Cape Town. I was an engineer for 3 years and 1 day. I studied engineering, 3 years and 1 day because I had a bursary and I gave 9 months notice and I miscalculated accrued leave. I wasn't going to be a lifetime engineer.
Yeah.
So worked as an engineer for a little bit, and then I went to business school and... I went across to the U.S. and worked for an investment bank there. Sure. In corporate finance, as they told me it was pronounced. It's not finance.
All right.
You finance your car, okay. I was told on day one. So I worked in corporate finance, M&A, and then I missed home. I wanted to come back to South Africa. But you can't go back to Cape Town after being in Cape Town. Is just too quiet.
It's too sleepy, it's
drowsy. It's a great place to retire to, but it's not a great place to work. Mm. So came back home to Joburg. Worked a bit in private equity, and then started up a business with a friend and sold out of that at the end of 2003, and then started up All Life with a couple of friends. Sitting around having coffee, and we thought this is where what we wanted to do. And now we've got about 300 odd people in the business. So we launched in the UK last month, and it's been a 13 year journey so far.
Wow.
And great fun.
So what exactly does your company do?
Okay, so All Life in South Africa provides life insurance to people living with HIV and diabetes. So those big groups of people, so there's about 17% of the adult population in South Africa is HIV positive. About 12% of the adult population is diabetic. So we operate in quite a big segment. And what we do that's pretty different to life insurance companies in general, and what kind of happened when I was sitting with Avron and Paul having coffee, we said is actually life companies work in a very strange way. What they do is they take their data and they try and price people perfectly. Try and figure out exactly who you are.
Mm.
And we said, actually, that's the wrong way to do it. Why don't we use our data to turn our clients into perfect people? So instead of trying to look for those perfect people, just help our clients be those people.
Look, I'm going to interrupt because it could be quite salesy. Before you start saying, this could just be sales talk.
That's why you're my business partner. The handbrake.
So just describe what that really entails for us, please.
Well, if you look at people living with HIV, and we were sitting down in 2004, you saw there was a small group of people who you could identify as doing the right thing. And that normally life companies go after that small group of people, and everybody else struggles to access life insurance, and that's what's underwriting about. And we said, well, that very small group of people you could tell were doing the right thing. And what defines as doing the right thing in HIV is what you're going to do over the next 20 years. You know, kind of manage your health, regular CD4 count and viral loads, take your drugs at the right time, do everything kind of on a schedule. What matters is what you do over the next 20 years. What you did last year is actually largely irrelevant, right? So we said, well, that very small group of people, it's very hard to find them, and it's very hard to produce a business just aimed at that very small group of people. And then we said, well, instead of trying to find them, how about we help everybody else be that, those kinds of people? Because we know actually from the data what you should do. And actually people want to know what to do. They want to be empowered. They want to know how they should be behaving and what they should be doing to live a long time. And the longer our clients live, you know, the better for us, sure, and the better for them. So everybody kind of wins.
It's a kind of, if we're going to relate it to a bigger brand out in the market, it's kind of the discovery thing, what they do with their vitality program. Can we relate it to that?
So it's similar. I mean, so except this is an outbound driven process. So yes, we keep track of our clients' health, and then we intervene. We send them text messages. Lovely. We send them reminders. We call them. We email them. All that kind of stuff.
Assist them to manage it. So it's not a passive thing. It's very, very hands-on, very active.
Yes, it's very active and very bespoke. Very nice. But it's also so it was about kind of figuring out how to help people do the, and it's not the cutting edge kind of stuff, because actually it's 80-20 here. The 20% of effort to get 80% of the results. Mm. And that effort is around just getting people into a regular beat, reminding them when to do stuff, getting them to go for stuff that's available, but maybe they've forgotten or it's not urgent or whatever it is. So getting people to move down that path. And once we'd figured out how to do that from an IT-driven perspective. So, you know, kind of we had to deliver the IT that actually allows us to deliver this this kind of intervention. Then we saw some other interesting stuff.
Like what?
So the life insurance industry was entirely driven through brokers, through intermediaries in 2004. And when we went to market, we thought, okay, well, we've got a product here. And by the way, we're backed by Genry. So that's part of Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett.
Yeah, the Warren Buffett. Right. Exactly. I was going to ask about the name.
It's not that we know each other personally, I have to say.
But it's a nice name to drop.
Absolutely. It always gets a response. So they actually stand behind the risk on our product. So it's a nice story, so it's a nice marketing message, but actually the reality is there's some very deep pockets who stand behind and go, actually,
yeah, exactly,
you've done the data correctly, you are actually having impact on longevity, you are actually changing people's lives. So we went to market and we found that brokers actually felt uncomfortable dealing with people who were living with HIV.
Really?
They didn't know what to do. They didn't know, you know, kind of how to react and how to interact.
Yeah, there's a sensitivity there that you may or may not have
of
developed.
Of course.
Yeah.
No. And be skilled, upskilled to do.
Mm. And yeah. I mean, and the stigma associated with HIV meant actually clients didn't want to deal with brokers who were often peers, who were often in their social setting. Mm. They didn't want to reveal their status to brokers. So suddenly we were sitting with a product that would help out 70% of the population, but no ability to distribute.
Mm.
So we were forced to become a direct player. So we're on TV. There's lots of advertising. We're sending text messages. We do all the irritating things direct marketers do, right? Okay, to reach clients. But we had to go that way because the existing distribution wouldn't actually sell the products. Mm. So we went that way. And when you do that, you also you see clients much earlier. So you see people when they're thinking about getting life insurance as opposed to when they actually have life insurance. Mm. And kind of nobody knows why people get life insurance. I'm looking around the room and odds are that that nobody else in this room has life insurance. So nobody really understands why it is in the moment why somebody gets life insurance. So it might be that a car drives close to your foot. You think, oh, if that had hit me.
My dependents, family, my
parents,
ones.
My kids, my spouse, my extended family, whatever it is, they would have really suffered. And in that moment you go, maybe I should think about getting life insurance, right? And then every day that goes by that you don't actually get it was actually a great day not to have bought it. Right, because you saved the premium. It's one of the few self-reinforcing non-purchase products out there. So if you decide you want life insurance today and you haven't managed to access it a month later and you're still alive, okay, it was a good idea not to get it.
Mm.
Right? You saved the month's premium.
Yep.
If you died, you don't actually know that you died. So,
so
everybody knows but you.
Yeah, no, exactly. So what happens is the closer you are to that moment that you can actually serve a client, the more likely you are to actually give a client what they want kind of when they want it.
Mm.
And kind of then we focused our technology on that, on actually changing the customer experience, changing the way people interact with us, allowing people to get really access to life cover when they wanted it, as they wanted it. And that's what's resulted in our launch in the UK.
What a great business.
No, I agree. And
let's dig
into the man behind the business. Absolutely. Then, because you're also the founder, of course, you mentioned, 2004, there was the founding stages of this. But before that even, I'm interested to know, is this just the numbers made sense, so we did it?
Why?
What's the origin? Why? What's the real origin story here?
So there's a combination, right? Mm. So there's a... I think everybody in business would like to really have real impact on their clients' lives. Absolutely, I mean, I think most people actually just don't get the chance sometimes. So, you know, kind of you get some peripheral impact. So when you see we didn't actually think when we were talking, we thought surely this gap can't exist. I mean, it's 17% of the adult population can't actually not be served. And if you go back to 2004, that's Thabo Mbeki, that's mm-hmm. you know, kind of HIV is front and center in the kind of public consciousness. You're very aware about it. You're very aware of what's going on in the country, and it's a space that you want to be able to influence. And then when you get to see the data, you become quite passionate, because the difference between doing the right thing and the wrong thing is so dramatic, right? It's just insanely dramatic. So the ability to have impact on that space, that's, you know, a massive driving force. But also the fact is it's a great business opportunity, because actually it's a place where nobody else wants to be, and you can actually deliver change into that space. So, you know, kind of it's neither one nor the other. It's a combination of those two things. But it really was about being able to have that kind of impact, but in a great business.
So
can I ask Chris? Gee whiz. I mean, I'm also here. Ross. Lessons learned. How long has this business been operating?
So 13 years.
13 years. That's a good innings.
Yeah, no.
But I'm sure there have been low times, setbacks, failures, disadvantages.
There's been insane moments.
Bring it. Okay. We want to hear that.
So I remember the three of us sat down together and we spoke about how long it would take. So we figured this out. You know, so the story I've just told you, we figured out in the first week. And so that was the interesting part. Mm. And the rest is sweat and tears and struggle and strife.
The true story.
Yeah. So we sat down and I still remember the first time we went to go speak to a reinsurer. And they said to us, well, nice story. That sounds good, right? Well, how long is it going to take you to launch? Because you've got to automate a whole lot of things that don't exist. You've got to do a whole lot of stuff that doesn't happen anywhere in the world.
Sure.
How long is it going to take you to launch? And we'd spoken about this before, because we figured we'd be asked this question. And we figured that anything imaginable could be done in 3 months. Okay, anything. I mean, you could. They wasted time on the mission to the moon. I mean, I don't know what they did for the decade. Okay, anything imaginable could be delivered in 3 months. So we wanted to be conservative. So we said 6 months.
Yeah, okay, so well, at least you were conservative.
We launched 2 years later. I'll say, and yeah, kind of in that 2 years is a slog, because you see, 2004, if you want to know what else launched in 2004, Facebook launched in 2004.
Sure.
So you get these stories that swell up in the public consciousness, and it all feels instantaneous, right? It all feels like people appear out of nowhere, right? Last week we were called a startup, right? It's taken us 13 years to be called a startup. It's quite, it takes a long time to become an instantaneous success is the learnings here. I mean, you take just so many little steps, and those little steps can be quite depressing, because you look at the work you do and you go, I just took this tiny step.
Mm.
Steps turn into you go a long way. It's taking one little step after another is how you build a business. Most businesses, I mean, there are a few that just skyrocket. Right?
What's so interesting is that even in the space here in Cliff Central, and we've heard it from the founders a number of times, is that they've had people that they turn to, advisors, and those advisors say, look, your business, you don't even know what business you're in for the first 3 years. You're still you're figuring it out the first 3 years. Only after that will you really begin to understand. At least you seem to have an understanding of what business you're in initially. Can you give us an example or two of just what what kind of tension you were under, what kind of frustration you had to experience?
Well, obviously there's, you know, kind of things don't go perfectly smoothly. You have disagreements amongst your team. You have shouting arguments, and you know, I tell people, if they would just listen to me,
That's what I keep on saying.
You know, Gareth says it all the time.
Yeah, things will be much calmer and easier. Right?
I don't believe this. No.
You can just come back next
sure.
year.
Gareth's favorite guest. Yeah.
But I think that the biggest transition point was, you know, we were having to fund the business. So we were working as consultants on the side and had All Life starting up on the other side. So building the infrastructure, but you have to earn a living. You have to. In fact, in the month we launched actually into the market, my daughter Emily was born. So oh, the wow. same month we launched oh, into wow. the
crazy
market.
Times,
we,
no, crazy exactly. times.
Yeah. Very careful planning. So you're funding, you're building, actually we actually built a surprisingly big consulting business while building All Life. And then we had to make a decision. We had to say, are we going to do this thing or are we not going to do this thing? Mm. And we shut it down.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah.
And that call was quite, you know, kind of quite tough. That kind of letting go of this business you'd actually built by the by. Mm. And choosing to focus everything on one thing. It's quite a big moment for us as individuals, because then we were funding it out of our bonds and our funding it a bit out
yeah,
of debt.
Personal, absolutely. Yeah, personal risk, massive personal
exactly.
risk. And I appreciate that. I'm so grateful that you're sharing it, because too many people, I think they feel like there is this place that you can go where there's lots of money that you can tap into and it's this magical world of venture capital, but that's not always the reality for many businesses. And here is a working example of that. I mean, there of course must have been funding that came as a result of certain traction that you've experienced, but that's later on.
Correct. I mean, I think that the key, I do come out of M&A and private equity.
Yeah.
So we have raised, we discovered, so one of the other insanities is we thought actually building an insurance business wasn't going to cost a lot.
Mm.
Okay, so we've raised hundreds and hundreds
of
millions.
It's a computer program.
Right? How difficult can it be?
Yeah.
But kind of the one key thing is that funds invest in businesses, not in ideas.
Mm.
You have to take the idea and turn it into a business so that people can invest. And a lot of people come with a very early stage. So early stage, it really is an idea. There's no delivery, there's no execution, there's none of that.
Mm.
But so you've got to get over certain milestones to be able to access funding. But funding changes your business quite dramatically. Mm. Suddenly you go from having, literally having no boss, right, to having a board and to having shareholders and to having other
exactly.
people that you have to report to. And it changes the interaction in the business over time.
Mm.
You're highly educated, as you said. How do you, in this point in time, still self-empower yourself and educate yourself just to keep on upskilling yourself? What do you do?
So there's, so people are just very interesting, right? I mean, I get to meet some insane people along the way. I get, kind of being in now call it a medium-sized business in South Africa, you get approached by people who have interesting thoughts or ideas, or you run into people when you travel, and that engagement is unbelievable. I mean, people have some very interesting stories if you give them the chance to tell them, or if you figure out where they're coming from and actually you drill down to the kernel of what they're saying. And there's some just very interesting journeys and tales out there that help you keep growing and thinking and interacting.
I like that. It's a little bit more real than I read a book. It's very, very real.
I read a book a day.
Do you really?
Yeah.
A book a day?
A book a day. Fiction. So I've run out of anything good.
Okay.
So,
okay. That's cool.
Do you have a special skill that you're not telling us?
No,
are you able to speed read?
No, so from so everybody in my house is probably asleep by about 10.
Okay.
I go to sleep by about 1 a.m.
All right.
Yeah, so between 10 and 1 a.m. I'm reading with my Kindle.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, very nice. Phoebe, how are you feeling about Ross as a CEO?
Loving his story. Skills or connections in business, Ross?
So
to be successful.
I didn't start a business as a student, right? So you have a different skill set, you have a different connection set.
Mm.
What you have is also a different risk appetite, right? So when you're a student, you're risking very little, right? When you're a professional in a career, you have an opportunity space that is driven by a career path in a corporate. which has significant value.
Correct. Okay.
And that's actually what you trade off against entrepreneurship. So it's not necessarily the, you can have the same quality idea, but if your own risk capacity is different, you're unable to chase it down. So as you get a little bit further down the career track, you have better capabilities, just you've got better experience. You've done a few more things and you know a few more people and doors open because you're considered a professional and it's easier to get in to see people. But on the other side, you risk more and it's harder to actually take that risk and actually deliver on the opportunity. So the professional piece had really helped along the way. But the opportunity cost trade-off is also makes it quite difficult to actually be in a later stage. And so we started All Life, I was 30. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Entrepreneur.
When, maybe I can ask this question a little bit differently. I want to just pull us back to the idea of team management because you're a CEO.
Yeah.
It's a real thing at the top. So I'll quickly introduce it this way. We often ask individuals who, when they first started out, what percentage of your work was technical and what part of it was leadership or people orientated? And most people say 90% technical, 10% people. Then they're just doing their bit.
Yeah.
In the case of the CEO, it really changes. It flips on its head. It's 90% people or leadership, 10% technical. Is that accurate for you? And just describe maybe your, let's call it leadership style, if you wouldn't mind.
So there's stuff you learn along the way. So if you start out in a small business, you know, you get the I got the title CEO amongst the three of us because I actually like talking to people.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, kind of, and that was kind of a key requirement. But nobody's managing anybody, right? Mm. So you're a small team. Everybody kind of does what they're meant to do, and then as you start scaling, as you start growing, then the business starts changing. Right? I mean, we've turned into the corporate we didn't want to be in. Right?
Sure.
I mean,
that's the reality, you know, of growth, I think.
So true.
Yeah, it's, I mean, so the business changes, and then you've got to figure out whether you're happy with the role you now have to play, and you start learning about the new role. And as the business has scaled, so my role has changed over time.
Mm.
But it does shift from that 90-10 to 10-90, mm. And it's quite interesting to realize that you've got to be able to, it's hard to value stuff that you don't do. Right, it's much easier to point to something that you did and go, look, I had a good day. Look what I delivered. Look what I produced. And you've got to go, I had a good day because actually everything ran smoothly around me. Mm. Okay. Mm. And actually, but it appears like I did very little and I'm okay with that. Right. So there has to be a mind shift change. And then if you say my management style, so I'm not great at giving people structure. So okay. I'm very, you know, so there are people who operate well in structured environments.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of people in our environment at the senior level have to come along and create structure around them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more of the disruptor in our business, if you will.
I'm not surprised. That doesn't surprise me.
So you know, kind of, and you can only have one or two of those. Okay? Yeah. Very destructive to an organization. But I kind of force change. Yeah. And force action and force delivery.
Love that.
Sometimes. And sometimes break other pieces of the business as a result, right? Mm. So there's a trade-off to forcing that level of change.
So you were saying that you are the destructive type. How do then? But you have you evolved into that?
Well, so I'm relatively disruptive. Okay. Would be the,
yeah, and know, disruptive kind of a, is a better word than destructive.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
not
destructive.
Yeah, exactly.
Disruptive. So, yes, absolutely. Okay, so. How do you work with people that aren't then that don't necessarily see what you're seeing?
Well, so I mean, you know, very comfortable with fairly open, robust debates, you know, kind of lots of use of the whiteboard and explaining logical positions, very, very logical, very problem solving approach, comes from engineering, comes from that kind of background. And there's no kind of set solution. What you're looking for is the best answer, and if it's not mine, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It may take a whole lot of other people to convince me of the case.
Sure.
But you know, kind of what we're looking for is the best answer, not someone's answer.
Mm.
And as long as that's the framework in which we operate, then we actually get some great outcomes.
He's got a great sense of humor.
I agree.
Great sense of humor.
I think when you're starting a business and you've run it for 2 years on your own funds, you kind of have to have a good sense of humor.
I think that's like a good leadership skill as well. Just, you know, I think Dr. DeMartini would have enjoyed that part of, you know, just the office scenario is having a good sense of humor at some point.
No, absolutely.
Yes, Ross, what do you think of that?
Yeah, no.
You have to, dude.
The saddest thing though, is as the business grows up, I now have to leave the office party for everybody to have fun. So you know, everybody's well behaved. I'm in the room, and you know, and I'm still somewhat surprised that I'm that guy. Right?
Time flies.
Exactly. It's like you're not. You know, you have to leave, and you got to think. Okay, I guess you know this is early enough. I'll give the guys a chance to let their hair down, and I need to leave. It's like for people to have a party, I now need to leave, which is a bit.
Come to that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a strange space.
Yeah, it's the evolution of leadership and a CEO. We have run out of time almost.
No worries.
There's one question we always ask everyone, so maybe you can give us just one or two points here. And it's if you can go back in time and speak to the young future CEO, you 20 years old, what would you say to Ross Bierman, the 20-year-old future CEO?
Don't be so stressed. Okay. Don't, you know, kind of, so life is made up of a ton of little good or bad decisions. It's not, there isn't this big moment that you can actually point to, but if you make enough good, little good decisions along the way, you'll get the right outcome.
Okay. Fantastic.
Make good little decisions.
And consistently.
Yeah.
Just consistently.
I like that a lot.
Very nice. Ross, thank you for being here in studio. That's the voice of Ross Bierman, the CEO of All Life Group. We are so grateful for you sharing your insights with us today.
I know. Thanks so much for having me.
Making us feel good. Thank you so much, Ross.
Klubi, are you happy today?
I'm feeling so great. Thank you so much, Ross.
All right. So we will be back same time, same place. And these feel-good feelings that Klubi's feeling, that I'm feeling, that I hope Ross is feeling, you can feel too next week, same time, same place. See you then.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.